Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla Thompson.
My name's Admiral Vaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 63 on... It's the August now, mate. August, it's ticked over. The year's going really quick. I was actually talking to a colleague today and as we're doing some planning, and we're planning next week for week 5. It almost seems unbelievable at
and,
this point.
Yeah, and nearly midterm 3. And it's funny, Adam, I'm still planning... or just trying to organise some things, some routines in my classroom, you know, to get some stuff going to do with various parts of the curriculum, which I'm thinking, I can't believe it's term 3, and I'm just trying to get this. And I'm sure, I hope teachers who are listening know what I mean there. You know how you've got all these best laid plans, and it's just so hard to get everything going well straight away at the start of the year.
Absolutely, and because there's a lot of things to bring home as well, and you need a life outside of school as well, and sometimes you just need a bit of a break and do those things. But I do want to say to kick off the night that tomorrow my school's got Japan Day. We do the language and stuff, and do it really, really well too, and the kids really enjoy it. So, you know, you have the special lunch, so we've got sushi rolls and dim sims, and even though dim sims aren't Japanese, they're Chinese.
But Chinese.
they are, but the parents want to go with the dimmies, and I don't mind an odd dimmy. There's always a few leftovers, but you got to dress up as something from that culture, from Japan.
Do you reckon that's difficult? Can I just jump in?
Yeah, go for it.
We talked about this off air, and we had Celebrate Asia Day at our school last term. These days, and I don't want to sound like I'm being too PC or nanny-like, but do you find that sort of day tricky to, particularly with primary kids, to model to them what is a respectful way to dress up?
Yeah, I think so. I think the kids are pretty good at it, though. I think the parents are pretty good at it, too. Yeah. Like, if a kid comes home and says, I want to go dressed as this, and it's sort of, like you said, it's not, you know, really reflective of the culture and a little bit, could be a little construed to be a little bit mean or something, they're all over it. But I wanted to bring up and say that, you know, this year I've decided on Japan Day to go as Johnny Lawrence of the Cobra Kai's from the Karate Kid. Now, because I the way I looked at karate, you know, Japan, Okinawa from where Mr. Miyagi was, just done as part of Japan, and I thought I could go dressed, but lots of kids come in there karate. Lots of young kids do karate. So I've got the Cobra Kai outfit as Johnny Lawrence.
That's great. Listeners need to know that you're a Karate Kid film fan.
Aficionado. I mean, I could probably recite the whole movie on air right now if I wanted to, but you know, I'll be yelling things out because I thought I'd better get into the Cobra Kai spirit. So I thought I'd be yelling at the kids. So if the kid said, such and such, Johnny put his hands on me, he pushed me over, I'd yell things out like, get him a body bag. Yeah, like that guy over the back, and you know, tell a kid to sweep the leg, and you know, do some John Kreese impersonations. I'll be getting right into it tomorrow.
I know that's great. I know the film, but I had none of the quotes. I hope some of our listeners do that.
No, surely you've got to know, get him a body bag. That's one of the ones where the guy's laughing over the back before, you know, Daniel LaRusso does the big crane kick.
No, I don't.
Really?
And that's okay, Adam.
It is okay.
But look, it's great.
That is slightly disappointing, but you know.
But I think you're getting into. I think you've found a little niche with pop culture there. Sort of. I mean, it's an American film, but like granted, but some Japanese pop culture
there is
a degree.
Because really, we've had Japan Day for a few years now, and how many different things can you get dressed up as?
But that's what I mean. It's difficult, and on a serious note, I think it's difficult to. I mean, we're a multicultural nation, and granted, your school and my school don't have as many, I guess, students from backgrounds other than. I think it's one of those ones to be careful, you know. I think flag colours and that sort of stuff is safe.
That's all right. A lot of kids will turn up in the sort of the red t-shirt with maybe some white on it and things like that. But I'll fill you in next week. Maybe we do thanks mate. We do have a lot of topics to get in tonight, so before I fly in and crane kick a student, let's get into it.
Well, Adam, for the first topic tonight, I need to kind of get into the groove for a presentation I've got to do in a few weeks with this topic, Adam. And I'm not blowing my trumpet, but I'm actually sort of, I want to riff on this topic a little bit to get your opinion and to try a few things. So in late August, I'm presenting at the IWB Net, leading a digital school conference, and I'm certainly not suggesting that I'm a leader, but I'm going to go and talk. I haven't done this presentation before, but I'm going to talk about retrospective reporting as opposed to ongoing reporting. The main focus is ongoing reporting through conferencing with the kids and some other ways. And with this topic for the podcast tonight, I wanted to kind of talk about those two things versus each other. So ongoing reporting versus June and December retrospective reporting. So over the past few years, the situation I've been in is that you have, particularly in the senior years when I've worked, you get some conference time given to you for the kids to come and show you evidence of their learning or their learning goals.
Yep.
And you punch into the system, whatever system it is, whether it's just a document that goes home to the parents or the learning management system, the evidence of that goal, what the kids have shown you, and that replaces, I guess, all those comments that we write retrospectively at June and December. You and I have talked about this in previous podcasts before.
Yep.
And this year, again, has evolved at our school in a different way, where I'm in the younger levels, obviously, but even at the higher levels now, we don't have that conferencing time, as it were. But the idea is that you're kind of adding in ongoing reports as you go, or maybe at the end of a unit of work that you do with the kids. So I guess I want to talk about the positives of that, because there's lots, but also the things that I haven't quite worked out yet. And part of my presentation in late August will be about questions that I've still got.
Yeah,
and I'm hoping that the people who are there, we can kind of have a discussion about what's good and what works. Because I think ongoing reporting is valid. Let's talk about that for a second. Yep. Is that, you know, those paragraphs and paragraphs of things that we used to write, or a lot of people still write at June and December, to me, aren't as valid as maybe something that goes to parents the day or the week that it happens.
Your thoughts? Look, firstly, congratulations on going to the IWBNet to give that presentation. I think that's terrific. I think you're selling yourself short as a leader there, man. I think the opportunity to go and do that is terrific. My first thing when it comes up, though, is I think that it can be a mix of both. Now, I know you talk about ongoing reporting, and I can speak from the fact that in the sense of ongoing reporting going around to parents and doing those things, I haven't done that. I haven't had that experience before. I haven't actually been a part of that. But I kind of feel like that teachers today are constantly doing that ongoing reporting. You know, I'm constantly conferencing with students on their reading. I'm constantly doing post-tests and working with small groups in maths and doing those things in writing. That's that constant ongoing reporting that I don't think 5, 6, 7 years ago we were doing enough of. And I think we're constantly doing that. I think probably what you're more getting at is that ongoing reporting going home to parents, that when you do something, that you do something and you put it on, that the parents can get on straight away and take a bit of a look at it. So they're constantly seeing that feedback. They're not just getting that report in June and December. Is that more what you're getting at, that idea of, you know, I've had you, Rick, I've had you conference with me today. We've gone through your goal. I've written it down in here and how you've gone and where you're going to next. And the parent has straight away got access to that.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Probably mainly because that's kind of the situation that I'm in my workplace at the moment, is that there's a lot of push out to parents because this is still a relatively new system, the learning central, the learning management system. So it's about getting our parent body, hopefully, on board to be going online and checking for these things. Now, I'm not going to argue whether about the numbers of parents who are or are not, and it's hard to work out what parents value the most, whether it's progression point dots or whether it's comments. But I think, look, my thinking is, though, is about the time, because to me the best time to be able to put evidence of some learning achieved by a student is at that very moment.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
It's like correction. I think taking loads of correction home at primary level, I don't think is as beneficial as what I thought it used to be, it's happened, and the kids won't go back and look necessarily. Some will, because they're just like that.
But,
you know, it's like that to me. It's at that moment when the learning happens is the most powerful moment.
Can I interject there too and say, one thing that always gets me about the ongoing reporting is when you do that ongoing reporting, it's very goal-based. The students get their goals, they know where they're going to go to next and doing those sorts of things. I think goals in the upper levels are easier to manage. I think they're older, they can take more responsibility for what they're doing and go, you know what, I've been given this goal, I've got to work on this goal. I know that the next time I go to a conference with Mr. KT or Mr. Lavaz, that they're going to be checking that. I find it, having gone back to the 1-2s, I find that a little bit more difficult than the lower grades. Have you found that as well? In the sense that they just don't remember as well. You give them that goal and you talk about it and you model it and you do these things. They go away and then you might catch up with them. I know for reading, I try and catch up with them once a fortnight as time allows. They sit down. So, what was your goal? I don't remember. Have you been working on your goal? Not really. You know, they just don't take that on. You know,
it's the turnover too, Adam. And I know teachers that I've worked with who have worked in the younger levels have said it's the turnover of those goals, particularly if they're displayed. You know, if you've got like the goal chart on the wall.
I hate that. I'm going to jump in there. Sorry, I hate it so much.
Yeah, I know. It's that turnover. Like, I don't mind saying that. You know, in public here, like, and having that time, particularly to help, like you said, you've got to help the younger kids. And when I say turnover, I mean, you know, taking that little goal slip off the wall and putting another one on, and where does that one go, and how do we know, and when can I as a teacher check to make sure they have got that, you know,
because
obviously you're making time to see, like you said, maybe over a fortnight in each subject, or, you know, all the kids in your class, but gee, it's difficult. And I still don't know a teacher who has a goal system chart working perfectly, and this goes from experienced teachers to inexperienced teachers. Yeah,
yeah. I think getting a gold chart that works would actually take away a lot of your teaching time. You'd have to be constantly having kids over, but you'd be missing out on such great opportunities to just teach. I think you'd still need that. I know today we were, you know, looking at stretching the sounds of words with my 1-2s today, and we're looking at the planets. You know, they love space. We always talk about that, and it ended up going a little bit over time, but we were talking, asking questions, and looking at new words and putting up and stretching and stuff. I think if you were constantly focused on goals and doing that stuff, you wouldn't get that chance. You'd be trying to rush through these lessons. You'd be trying to rush through things so you could get all the kids over there. And really, they're not going to have that opportunity to learn as much as they would otherwise, I suppose.
Absolutely. And just to finish off, just moving back to the reporting side of things, this ongoing reporting, I just still have, and this could be, maybe I'm completely wrong and I need to suck it up, I just have this problem with ongoing reporting being something that has to happen outside of my learning time. So where I get, of my work time, where I get allocated, well, not allocated, but it's suggested that maybe at the end of certain pieces of work, I put these ongoing comments for each of the 26 kids in my room up online, because it's still that's still going to happen on my weeknights when I'm at home. I just, there's no time to do it during the day. In the planning time that I get when the kids are at their other classes, that's used for something else. It's used for planning with my team. I still don't see how, to me, that's just then spreading all the comments I normally write at June and December across sort of the whole year. So I'm kind of reporting all year. So I'm just going to leave, I want to leave that question out there. Yeah. I mean, to see what people think, but it's a big one, and we might come back to it later in the term, Adam, on a podcast, and we might hear from some people. Hopefully at the conference, I might learn some things too from what some other schools are doing.
So, Rick, as we head into the middle of term three, this idea of this topic kind of came last week. We talked about sick days and how we used to take sick days and all that sort of stuff. And it came about attendances in schools. And I know, talking generally to a lot of other teachers, as you kind of get to the middle of the year, you kind of begin to see a trend in attendances, and the students who aren't there a lot and have all those extended holidays and have illnesses and all those things, and the impact that it can have on their learning long term. And I was brought... it was brought to my attention of a few schools that had some attendance data that said that they had a lot of their absences, the high amount of absences were actually happening in the lower levels, the prep through to grade two. And I wanted to talk to you tonight about the impact that absences can actually have, because there's so much important learning that goes on in the P to 2 area. And if kids are missing a lot of school, they're missing out on a lot of crucial stuff, you know, in reading and writing, maths across the board. What are your thoughts on that, and extended family holidays and all those sorts of things? What are your thoughts on that as a whole, I guess?
Well, firstly, let's be clear. There's a myriad of reasons why students, and let's mention primary for starters, because that's our experience, have days off. So let's be clear. And I mean that just in that's an unavoidable thing, and that there's a huge amount of reasons. Mm. The one that is of concern, the ones that are of concern to me are the ones that you mentioned about maybe, and actually you mentioned it in your anecdote last week, those kind of loose days off, those sort of sickies where perhaps students wake up, you know, maybe feeling a bit tired and are able to sort of say to mum and dad, oh, I feel a bit sick, and mum and dad sort of go with it. So it nearly is a primary school, they're the worry. And I think, you know, families sometimes need actual support, and this is, I've learned this, and I think more so than early in my career, I've you know, this happens more often, that families, sometimes parents, not all obviously, but some need some help with maybe how to manage that those conversations at home to get the kid to school.
And do you think families actually understand the impact that it has? And I'm talking about years ago in 5-6 having a student who had been ahead and having them for the first half of the year, and they came out as at level, you know, and so you mark them as such, and then having that parent-teacher review, and the parents kind of sitting there going, why hasn't my student progressed? Why are they now further behind? Why are they at level and things? And you look back through and see how much time that they've missed, and the parent not actually putting two and two together and going, you know what, they were ahead, but having them miss all this time, whether or not that's through sickness or extended time off, all those things, do they not understand? Do they not make that correlation and connection?
I'd like to think that most teachers have let them know before that. So, before that mark goes out, that they kind of say, look, this is where I'm going to put them.
Yeah, definitely.
These are the reasons why. But I think you're right. I think there's a lot of parents that don't understand it. I think not all, because I think we've got... I mean, I know a lot of parents who will take extended holidays during the term. Mm. And I completely understand the reasons behind that, and you would. Parents who are onto it will talk to you before extended holidays. And I'm sure you've had this where they'll say, look, we're doing this holiday. Mm. What are they going to miss? How much are they going to miss? And they're kind of onto it, and they understand that there's going to be that patch of learning. Holidays can be an issue if there's lots of them, I know. But you're always sort of... I'm never as concerned when it's a student who's above expected level. I'm sure you're the same.
Yeah.
But, you know, ongoing sicknesses, you can't help that. But it's interesting seeing... I don't know about you, Adam, but I've noticed that being in the younger year levels, my attendance... this year, my kids' attendance is fantastic. Last year, with the cohort in year six, I had lots and lots of absences. I'm not sure whether that was an older...
It's actually funny. I'm on the flip side of that. I know I've had 5-6 classes that in the past have been sensational in turning. I would rarely have an absence. Whereas I know this year, I've had a lot of sicknesses. I mean, I've had a lot of...
So it could just be chance then?
Absolutely. I think it could different be cohorts. Chance and different cohorts and things. Like, I've had days where I've had kids, 7-8 kids away, you know, and a lot of them are, you know they're legitimate illnesses and legitimate things like that. And I think on the flip side too, before, I don't want to go on too much longer on this one, but I think also there's that one of that kid being sent to school who you can clearly see is sick. Now, we've spoken about this before, who then... is sick a little bit and then we'll go away, and then all of a sudden you'll see other ones get that same sickness and they'll start to drop like flies, and you kind of think, you know, if they had kept that student away for 1 or 2 days, it could have really avoided knocking some of that class over. And
well, that's frustrating because I've got students at the moment who are going down like nine pins, but and not, you know, with just these little colds, and I think it's because of those kids who are coming to school unwell. Yeah. So, and just to finish off, it's interesting about, I know a lot of schools now, and I've been involved in some schools that have done this, are really starting to be explicit with the absence number. Mm. So at come report time or student conference time, student-led conference with parents, students have to talk about their absences with their parents. I've had this many, and it's quite that can be a sort of a tricky one for the teacher to say. Well,
and that's almost a discussion in itself. I mean, that could be a topic in itself of how do you approach that situation. You know, you know, schools give that full house award. You know, that they've been here for the whole term. Look, if you've got any, if you've had extended absences, if you've got ways that your school deals with those sorts of things, we'd love to hear about it.
Well, Adam, the third topic was suggested by you this week, and it's about... I'm going to throw to you pretty quickly here. It's about an article you saw in the newspapers about automated report card writing programs. Robots writing our reports, Adam.
Robots writing reports. That's the
what
one
is this?
Unbelievable sort of stuff. And I actually was kind of taken aback and went, what's going on here? So it's actually what it is there are teachers out there who are under the pump, and there are programs online. There's... I can't actually remember what they're called, but they are actually...
There's more than one, though, isn't
there? More than one. There's actually quite a few that you can sign up to. They're free. That you can actually sign up to, and they give you... They basically almost write your report for you. And what you can do is you can take the student's name, put it in, sort of click on a few different things that you want, and it'll sort of... It'll be kind of like a... It's like a large comment bank, so it'll have name, blank, and then, you know, the comment. So, you know, blank... is very conscientious in class and can always be relied upon to complete activities on time. You can sort of click through these things and it will literally write your report for you.
Comment banks aren't new, are they? I mean, that's something, that's something that schools put together even themselves of useful comments. But are you saying that you can click the series of comments that you would want after putting in a child's first name, and then it will collate it all like a jigsaw puzzle and give you a wonderful paragraph at
the end? Kind of, yeah. I think that's what it is. And then what the teachers are doing is they're doing this and copying it and pasting it into the reports. And they're doing it for quite a number of students. Now, it's really, really interesting because I know that that's not actually against regulation and what is expected of a teacher.
No.
The education department has actually come out and said, look, we discourage you doing this, but it's not actually, I think it's it's discouraged but not prohibited.
Each education department in the article was quoted. Each education department around the country, mind you, they've only interviewed New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland, but they all had different opinions, didn't they?
They did have different opinions, and it's actually interesting. I did forget to mention that one of the programs does charge $82.50. I think it's a yearly subscription that you can actually... log in and do this sort of stuff, and it's called Report Robot, and it actually tells teachers they can quote impress parents, quote personalized report comments for every student at a cost of $82.50 a year. Now, if a parent knew, I want to throw this out, if a parent got their report and they sat down with the teacher at, say, you know, student-led conference, and the teacher said, look, you know, that report there was generated by Report Robot. I did choose the comments and put the name in there and that sort of stuff. What do you think the reaction of a parent would be?
Oh, well, now that it's in the media, they wouldn't be happy about it.
They'd be angry because what parents still think that happens.
Fair enough,
I mean,
to a degree.
I mean, I've had still a parent recently come and say, oh, yeah, the reports are done. Oh, lots of copy and pasting. And I actually got my back up and said, well, I'll stop you there. I said, no, I actually write each student from scratch. Of course you have...
No, I think you've got a right to say that.
And absolutely.
I'm going to hark back to something I said in last week's podcast about looking after our profession and when I mentioned about Mel Cash and Spark Talk, because it is about not just always getting on the back foot, but exactly what you just did then is actually saying, well, hang on, no, I put my heart and soul into that. Everything in there is personal about your student.
I said there, your child. I've actually sat there and thought about your child and what makes them tick and all those things, and then I start writing. You know, of course you've got the same sort of comments. I mean, of course, you know, reading, writing, maths will look a little bit similar in parts because you do teach a lot of the same things. But, you know, what I want to also mention to you and say as well, there's other ones like schoolreportwriter.com, which provides about a library of 10,000 comments and things like that. On the flip side, I'm going to play the devil's advocate a little bit. With the pressures of teachers at the moment and the expectations and all those things, can you kind of understand where some teachers may get to a point where you go, look, I just don't have the time, I'm burnt out, I'm going to go to this to do it for me. Can you kind of slightly understand it a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I can, particularly for those late night report writing sessions that teachers have to do at home.
Mm.
I can also see it as the other side of it as teachers doing it just to get some other ideas, maybe even too. Mm. Like, and not all teachers are great writers, Adam.
No, that's true.
And you know, a lot of us do have higher literacy skills, but I've worked with some people who writing is like what maths is for some people. They're not confident, and their vocabulary is not as strong, and so they feel a little bit inferior and worried that they're not going to sound appropriate or professional to the parents. I noticed in the article that there's a comment from John Hattie saying that it's about public relations for a lot of schools. That schools don't have the confidence to write negative comments because it's about keeping public relations all positive. And, you know, I must say, I can certainly probably see a bit of reality in that from Hattie. I think that would be the case. We don't want to upset. How many times in your career, and I know I have a lot, been asked to... Well, you can't sort of write a negative comment. You have to try and frame it in a way that's instructive. But positive comment.
Yeah, for a long time though, the main section, and we don't want to go on for too much longer, but the main section of the report said, Rick has achieved. Now, I always came back to that achieved. Now, you can't write a bad comment because that's not something they've achieved. If they're finding something difficult, then they haven't necessarily achieved that. Do you get what I'm saying? You get that end of it where there's things you've got to work on, you can put things in there, but it's hard to be really blunt and actually say they're not doing well in this because... If you go back to it, that's not what they've achieved. You know, so I think there's got to be some work done on some. Maybe I'm being a little bit too technical, Rick. But
no, I think sometimes it's the classic is working towards or is learning to.
Yep. When focused, Rick is able to all those. So look, we do want to finish that one off now because we don't want to go on for too much longer. But it's an interesting one. The report robots out there, and I think on the flip side, parents would be mortified to think that that's how the reports are being done. But on the flip side, if I think people understood the pressures and the workload of teachers, you can slightly understand why they might go for the reporting robot.
So give us a robot.
Okay, mate. Now, knowing that the anecdote episode is next week, you're the man of the hour with just this single anecdote this week. Over to you, man.
Just to dip the toes in and get us ready for next week, Adam.
Beautiful.
I want to talk about two words, Adam. Lost property.
Lost property. I don't think we've ever spoken about that on the podcast before.
Common topic. Yeah. One that I remember from being a student, Adam, you know, always lost property. And check lost property. Well, I've been getting lately, Adam, in my pigeonhole, and I don't know if all schools do this. Every now and then in my pigeonhole is stuffed in there taking up all the room is a jumper. Or like a child's jumper.
Yeah.
Or a coat or sometimes a pair of pants, which I think is a bit odd. And it's normally something being returned. It's got the name on the tag of one of my students. And I want to come back to that one later as to why that appears in my pigeonhole and I've got to hand it back. But lost property, Adam, and it can be the absolute bane of your classroom if you let it.
Yeah.
If not, it's a beautiful... I guess it's like the pressure just lifts off the shoulders. If you're able just to go, I don't care about lost property, deal with it yourself, it is a lovely feeling.
It is. The annoying thing about lost property is it's always the same kids. It's It's always those same kids coming up. I've lost my jumper. You've lost it again. Have you? Well, that's three times this week. Go and check your bag logger. Go and check here. Go and check over there. Or you're walking along and you pick something up outside. You know, way our kids do it there, because they're not allowed back in. They might take the jumper up, they'll take it up and leave it at the door in the corner there. You'll come up to where they line up. You look down and go, oh, I bet you I know who this one is. Yeah, it's lucky I found it there. It's always those same sort of kids and that sort of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, and
can I ask, because that's a big one, why is it stuffed in your pigeonhole? What's going on there?
I know that there's some staff who listen to our podcast from my school, and I believe that it is either handed in, it may be handed into the office. So for some reason, this is my guess, some students aren't taking stuff they find a lost property, they take it to the office. Office staff have probably had enough with it, so they dump it in our pigeonhole. But I kind of wish it just would go to lost property. Take it to lost property.
Yep.
What does that teach the students if they lose something and it gets handed in the office and it goes into my pigeonhole and Mr. KT hands it back? Come on.
That's not good enough, mate. It's not good enough. Right. Now, the worst lost property one, I've got stories best because I actually came and say, is lost glasses. Student glasses when they
prescription
lose
glasses.
Prescription glasses. I know the student today who thought he'd lost them. Do you think he would let it go? Wouldn't let it go all day. Kept going on and on about it. I kept saying, look, have you checked there? No, it wasn't there. And I actually kept saying to him, I bet you.
How could he check at him? He can't see.
He can't see. Well, that's exactly right. Well done, mate. But I kept saying, no, probably at home. Yeah, he gets outside at the end of the day, goes to mum, no, you left them at home today, you know. And they worry about it because he was, oh, they're $500 glasses. Oh. And they get worked up about
they
it.
They keep asking you about it over and over again.
You go, no, well, have you looked there? Yes, I have. Well, I'm not a magician. Honestly, I'm not a magician. I can't go. And they're just going to turn up in my hand.
You can't. Another one that happens a lot is that a staff member, a colleague, will email the entire school saying, Joseph's lost his little card. It had a picture of a football player on it. If you see it, it's purple.
Yep.
Please hand it in. Do you know what? And I'm giving it away. I don't care who's listening. Delete.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to remember that what that item is. And like, even if my kids come in, you know, 10 minutes later, something else has filled my mind.
Yep.
I don't even know what
that is. And they've got to learn. I always say to the kids, look, if you bring something, if you've lost something that you're worried about, you shouldn't have brought it to school in the first place.
Oh, it's their responsibility.
It's their responsibility.
Have you got a lost property box or basket?
Yeah, we've got a big basket out the front of the office there, and I always say, go and have a look there.
Have you got one in your classroom just for stuff?
No, it's actually interesting. Someone brought that up with me recently and said, oh, Mum said you'd have a lot one in your classroom, and I said, actually, no, I don't. I always hold it up and someone will claim it. It kind of goes.
I do, because I get tired of the pencils and stuff everywhere. Yeah. So it's just like, and kids bring it up to me. I don't care. And I've said to the kids, okay, if you bring me that pencil, I don't care. If it's on the floor, and I've said this, I don't care whose it is. Has it got a name? Even if it has got a name, lost property, chuck it in there. I don't care.
Don't care.
At least the kids know. I mean, on a serious note, that they can go and check.
Because they do bring it up, though. And they go, who's this? I found this rubber on the floor. Really? You want to throw it out the window? I don't care.
A set of sticky notes with no name.
And come up to you like doing a conference or something like that. Look at this, we're riffing.
You know, I've said before, I didn't go to uni to deal with lost property.
No,
go and put it in the basket.
I didn't go to uni to deal with tying up shoelaces either, but it ends up becoming a bane of your existence.
That's a whole other topic.
So look, mate, that's a great topic, isn't it? Lost property.
Yeah. So leave us a comment on the blog with the most odd piece of lost property that you've had left around in your classroom.
So mate, that brings an end to episode 63 and another podcast in the bag. And I've got to say, we're a little bit excited about next week's anecdote episode. It's been waiting in the wings for a long time, hasn't it, mate?
It has, Adam, and I know we've got a few listeners who have been looking forward to it. And we've got, it's week 5 for us Victorian teachers next week, so it's halfway through the term.
Yes.
A nice time to stop and do an episode like this, Adam. And I hope you've got a little bit more time on your hands, because I think we're going to be sitting back and enjoying. We've got some special segments and some special bits to put in next week's episode.
Absolutely. It could be a little bit of a longer episode next week, too. It could go, because we really want to get into this, because we've had some good anecdotes sent in. We won't give away who or what they are or what they're about, but we really want to give these the time they deserve.
One thing I would like to give away, Adam, and hopefully to get people excited about listening, is that we have our first international guest joining in with the anecdote discussion. So really looking forward to that, Adam.
It was sensational to get an anecdote from Barack Obama. He's a keen listener, apparently. No.
Well, he's getting close to retirement, so he's got some spare time, so he's flicking through the podcast app.
Why wouldn't you? So look, till next week, from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Taylor Thompson, and we've both been two regular teachers.